UU orientation class. That will be Sunday, September 28th, from noon to 2:30. So if you're interested in learning more about Unitarian Universalism and our church in particular, please come. You'll learn more about our history, governance, programming, and how to get involved, and the value of being a member of our church. New members, friends, and those thinking about joining the church are invited to this class, and lunch and refreshments will be served. There will be child care available if you request that in advance. You'll find a sign-up sheet at the long table in the foyer, or you can contact Chris White or Al Haskell or Reverend Amy Shaw for more details. We also have TED Talks starting up again this Friday, September 19th, from 7 to 9:30 p.m. at the Milwaukee Street Traders. We will watch a TED Talk and follow up with discussion. Contact Phil Smith for more details. This chalice lead us to walk with others through the dark places of the world. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing hymn number 114, Forward Through the Ages.
Thank you.
Lake Country Unitarian Universalist Church. At LCUUC, we strive to surround this community with a spirit of love in everything that we do. My name is Laura Levenhagen, and I am the worship associate for today's service. As a welcoming congregation, we hope that everyone here, wherever you are on your life's journey, whatever your background, whether you walk in a circle or straight line, whether you walk forward or backward, whether you enjoy a walk in the wood or a walk on the wild side, you are welcome here. Please join us for refreshments and conversation in our social hall after the service. And while you're there, stop at the welcome table to find out more about LCUUC. Today's order of service includes announcements of upcoming church activities, and we look forward to all of our visitors, friends, and members joining in. Please take a moment to silence any electronics you may have brought with you this morning. And again, thank you for coming. We are so happy that you have chosen our church to worship and rejoice in.
I'd like to ask that Carrie Duma, our Children's RE Director, come forward and join me. She has a few words to share with us.
Welcome back, everyone. I know summer is busy and we don't all get here in the summer, but today is the first day of children's religious education classes starting up again. And I'm really excited about another year together, building our community, making new friends, opening ourselves up to new experiences and new ways to see the world. Our program, our RE program, seeks to teach our children to really open their eyes up to the wonder in life, to think in new ways and ask life's big questions, to discover the spiritual in everyday experiences. We also teach our children about our rich Unitarian Universalist heritage. We encourage them to search for what is right and true and meaningful in their lives. We want to remind you that religious education is a partnership between the congregation, our children, and their parents. It's a continuing journey which we're all on, regardless of age. In our RE classes, there are times that our teachers shine a light on illuminating something for a child, and sometimes it's the child who illuminates something for the adults. But we are all in this together. I'd like to share with you briefly what our kids will be learning about this year, in case some of you are curious. We have our wonderful Spirit Play classroom for our youngest children, our Montessori-based program that teaches our children about UU principles and ideas through storytelling and play. Our third to fifth graders will sample the meaning of many holidays and holy days of the world's major religions this year, so they'll be doing a lot of celebrating and baking and having fun in their classroom. But they'll also bring what they learn about other faith traditions and bring it back to comparing it to what we believe is UU's. Our middle schoolers are going to be exploring ideas through music and movies and how that relates to their lives and to our values. And our high schoolers are going to be exploring all sorts of spiritual practices this year with trained teachers in meditation, yoga, tai chi, writing. They're going to be exploring spirituality in art, spirituality in writing. So they should be pretty inspired this year. And they'll also be having discussions and doing social action and so forth. So just so that we all know who the teachers are that are teaching our kids, and so you can get a visual on them, I just thought I'd ask the ones who are here to stand up. If you're an RE teacher, if you could stand up. And I'll just say their names. There's Carlin Wagner, Sheila Larkin, Helen Vera, Anna Frez, Robert Ayler, Kelly Cole, Janice and Jim Tyler, Megan Fetters, Laura Suttinger, Stacey Schick, Chris Rollins, Chris Pesky, Jeff Craney, Nikki Craven, Amy Johnson, Kim and Rob Soar, Phil Smith, Kristen Sandin. So they're not all, some of them are in the classrooms, they're not all here, but it's just to let you know, we have so many wonderful people, so thank you, teachers. I'm going to you all join me in our appreciation for all that you guys do, and
bringing your hearts and your hands and your time to the kids of our congregation. I also wanted to recognize Claire Johnson. She could stand up. She's our new RE assistant and head youth leader this year. She'll be working with the youth group. So we're real excited to have Claire on board. And John Stout is also going to be working as a youth group advisor, too. So, you know, John. John's over there. Parents, just another reminder, it's really important that your children and youth attend class regularly. This allows them to find a community outside of school where they can comfortably explore and question and be accepted for who they are, and it allows their teachers and the rest of us to get to know them. So please bring them. These kids are our future. And kids, please ask your parents to bring you every Sunday. Speak up, talk to us, get involved. We will listen to you. We want to hear your ideas and what you want to learn about. So let us know, let me know, let your teachers know, let your parents know, please. And last reminder, please be sure to register your children for RE classes. We need to know about health issues and so forth. Our classes are open to all members and non-members alike. And just to everyone, please know that I'm here to answer any questions you may have about our program. I'm here on Sundays. I'm here during the week. So please let me know how we can make Unitarian Universalism an important part of your family's life. So thank you.
One of the ways that we help to care for our community is by contributing to local food pantries every month. And we contribute both financially and by collecting food items. If you have non-perishable food items you've brought to share, please bring them forward or ask a child to bring them forward. And I invite the children to stay up front and enjoy a story. So some of you may know this story, and some of you may not, but the reason we're showing it today is this. One of the things as Unitarian Universalists that we're really concerned about is how to help people in good ways, how to work with them, how to walk with them, and how to give them help they need without actually hurting them. So we're going to see in this story help you probably shouldn't give help. Because if you do everything for somebody, they never learn to do it for themselves.
If you give a mouse a cookie, he's going to ask for a glass of milk. When you give him the milk, he'll probably ask you for a straw. When he's finished, he'll ask for a napkin. Then he'll want to look in the mirror to make sure he doesn't have a milk mustache. When he looks in the mirror, he might notice his hair needs a trim, so he'll probably ask for a pair of scissors. When he's finished giving himself a trim, he'll want a broom to sweep up. He'll start sweeping. He might get carried away and sweep every room in the house. He may even end up washing the floors as well. When he's done, he'll probably want to take a nap. You'll have to fix up a little box for him with a blanket and a pillow. He'll crawl in, make himself comfortable, and fluff the pillow a few times. He'll probably ask you to read him a story. So you'll read him a story from one of your books, and he'll ask to see the pictures. When he looks at the pictures, he'll get so excited, he'll want to draw one of his own. He'll ask for some paper and crayons. He'll draw a picture. When the picture is finished, he'll want to sign his name with a pen. Then he'll want to hang the picture on your refrigerator, which means he'll need scotch tape. He'll hang up his drawing and stand back and look at it. Looking at the refrigerator will remind him that he's thirsty. So, he'll ask for a glass of milk. And chances are, if he asks for a glass of milk, he's going to want a cookie to go with it.
Did that look like very much fun for the little boy getting him everything? What do you guys think? Didn't look like very much fun at all. Do you think the mouse learned anything? Yeah, he learned about the house. But he didn't learn how to make cookies. He didn't learn where the scotch tape was. Not a very good way to be a friend. Being a good friend, being an ally, involves helping people to learn to do it for themselves and making it possible for that to happen. Could I please have Hannah come up? We're going to be doing something a little different this year. May the light and love of our chalice lead you today and every day. And if you all would get up and be prepared to follow your chalice bearer here. Please listen today as the choir sings the children to their classrooms. We're changing songs. And the new song is called For You Shall Go Out. The words are written in your order of service. Next week we'll have the music on the screen. Said, I've got good news and bad news. What do you want first? And Moses replied, Most merciful Lord, give me the good news first. Well, Moses, the good news is I've chosen you to deliver my people from bondage, God said. I'll force Pharaoh to release my children by causing years of pestilence. There will be plagues of locusts and frogs and devastation on the land. Pharaoh's armies will chase you as you leave, but don't fear. I will part the waters of the Red Sea to aid your escape. Moses stood for a minute and he said, My heavens, what's the bad news? And God said, Well, you will have to prepare the environmental impact statement for the Unitarians. The good news today is that you do not have to prepare an impact statement. The bad news is that a church cannot do social justice without funds. This morning we are going to be doing a special collection for the Reverend Mark Kemba and his UU Church in Uganda. Mark, would you mind standing up and waving for a minute? Gonna point to Mark there in the back. Mark is with us visiting today. He will be speaking here tonight at 6 p.m. and I encourage everybody to attend. So if you would, if you're writing a check, if you wanted to go into the special collection, please write special collection UU Uganda on it.
Lumina. Domina.
Thanks for these gifts given and received for the life and the work of this community. This is the time in our service where we share our joys and concerns together. And we do this in two ways, by speaking them aloud and by lighting candles. Would anyone who has a joy or a concern to share, please raise your hand and the ushers will bring you a microphone.
Good morning. My concern right now is for the whole world, actually, and I would like people just to send energy or prayers, whatever you believe in, to the leaders, that there's wisdom. This is such a difficult situation with what's going on over in Syria and this ISO, ISIS, whatever you want to call it. I wouldn't want to be president. I wouldn't want to be anybody that's in charge, because I don't know. And I think the only thing we can ask for is somehow that wisdom will really descend on people. Thanks.
My name is Esther, and On Friday, my daughter's boyfriend, 3-4 years, didn't realize he was having a heart attack. And anyway, it was Thursday already, and Friday they put in 4 stents. And this morning they're putting more in at 7 o'clock this morning, so I don't know how that's all turning out. But I'm a light candle of concern for him.
Hi, my name is Debbie, and I have a joy. My son left for China 2 months ago, and I just not really heard from him except an occasional, like, two kind of irreverent, joking Facebook posts. 25. And today, he's going to wake up in the middle of the night to watch the Packers and Skype his mother.
Lent, a candle of concern for Reverend Mark, who's visiting with us today, and the concerns that he brings from Uganda.
I'd like to light a candle of concern for my dear friend Jared Oldman, who through a mistake on the part of the U.S. Army has found out that rather than being deferred and being able to finish his ministry and go in as a chaplain, He will be going in active duty infantry within a few weeks. We light the last candle today for all of those joys and all of those sorrows which we hold deeply, but which have not been named here today.
Series of excerpts from the Hope Speech, written and delivered by Harvey Milk in 1979. Harvey Milk was the first openly gay politician in California, and he was assassinated after 11 months in office. While some of the language is dated, the message remains vital. Milk said this to a primarily gay and lesbian audience. You see, there is a difference, a major difference, and it remains a vital difference between a friend and a gay person, a friend in office and a gay person in office. Gay people have been slandered nationwide. We've been tarred and we've been brushed with the picture of pornography. In Dade County, we were accused of child molestation. It's not enough anymore just to have friends represent us, no matter how good that friend may be. Like every other group, we must be judged by our leaders and by those themselves who are gay, those who are visible. For invisible, we remain in limbo, a myth, a person with no parents, no brothers, no sisters, no friends who are straight, no important positions in employment. A tenth of the nation supposedly composed of stereotypes and would-be seducers of children, and no offense to the stereotypes. A gay person in office can set a tone, can command respect, not only from the larger community, but from the young people in our own community who both need examples and hope. The first gay people we elect must be strong. We must not be content to sit in the back of the bus. They must not be content to accept pabulum. They must be above wheeling and dealing. They must be, for the good of all of us, independent and unbought. The anger and the frustrations that some of us feel is because we are misunderstood. And friends cannot feel the anger and frustration. They can sense it in us, but they can't feel it. Because a friend has never gone through what is known as coming out. I will never forget what it was like coming out and having nobody to look up toward. I remember the lack of hope, and our friends can't fulfill it. I can't forget the looks on faces of people who've lost hope. Be they gay, be they seniors, be they blacks looking for an almost impossible job, be they Latinos trying to explain their problems and aspirations in a tongue that's foreign to them. And the young gay people in the Altoona, Pennsylvanias, and the Richmond, Minnesotas, who are coming out and hear Anita Bryant on the television and her story. The only thing that they have to look forward to is hope. And you have to give them hope. Hope for a better world, hope for a better tomorrow, hope for a better place to come to if the pressures at home become too great. Hope that all will be all right. Without hope, not only gays, but the blacks, the seniors, the handicapped, the usses will give up. And if you help elect to the Central Committee and other offices more gay people, that gives a green light to all who have been disenfranchised. A green light to move forward. It means hope to a nation that has given up. Because if a gay person makes it, the doors are open to everyone. So, if there is a message I have to give, it is that I found one overriding thing about my personal election. And it is the fact that if a gay person can be elected, it's a green light. And you have to give people hope. Thank you very much. Here ends our first reading.
Would you please join me in a silent moment of meditation or the spirit of prayer? Thank you.
Our second reading today is from Ally Is Not an Identity by Sarah Jackson. Jackson says, you cannot appoint yourself an ally. In order to become an ally, people in a specific community must feel that you are one. Sometimes it happens that a few people in a community see you as an ally, while others do not. This does not mean that you ignore those who do not. It means you shut up and listen in order to become a stronger ally. You may get conflicting information. For example, one woman may say it is acceptable to call her a lady, while other women may find it demeaning. Doing one or the other in the presence of certain people does not necessarily mean you are a bad ally. Remember that each person may view an issue differently. Monolithic human societies do not exist. As an ally, act accordingly. You are not part of the community. This applies mainly to LGBTQ+ supporters who think adding an A for allies is a good idea. You may march arm in arm in the streets and even be accused of being LGBTQ+ because of your support, but at the end of the day, you do not share our problems, and thus you are not one of us. Even though you may lie down in the trenches with the community, at the end of the day, you still have the rights that they are fighting for. Your opinion is not, and never will be, more valid than a person from that community. While yes, it is true that at times allies can teach the community a thing or two, but such instances are rare. Taking a queer studies course or even majoring in it will not make your thoughts on homophobia or transphobia more important or valid than a queer person's. Why? Because you read books and they have the experience. I read an article on what it is like to perform open heart surgery. Would that allow me to work my magic on you? Marginalized people do not owe you an explanation. As an ally, you may strive to understand everything about the community you support, and that is good. Demanding that community break itself down for you to understand, however, is bad. Google exists. Utilize it. Being an ally does not mean you have to march down the street with "I'm an ally" pamphlet and paraphernalia. Many marginalized people would prefer that you didn't, honestly. It's obnoxious. Being an ally means not only standing up for a community, even when they're not around, but, number one, checking your privilege at all times. Number two, understanding that knowing marginalized people does not equal being inclusive. Number three, not being upset when critiqued despite your attempts. Number four, acknowledging that ally is not an identity. Number five, knowing that your opinion takes a back seat to those with experience. Number six, self-educating. Number seven, remembering the intricacies of oppression. Being an ally is tough, but not nearly as tough as being marginalized. If you really want to use your privilege for good, memorize these seven simple concepts and prepare to learn a million more. I promise you'll be thanked for it. Here ends the second reading. Please rise and bow your spirit and join in singing number 1020 in the teal hymnal, Wo Ya Ya. We will sing it through twice. The first time we'll be with the choir, and you can join in the second time, and Michelle will let you know when to join in.
Things you love, things you can't quite identify anymore, even some really big things that got in there somehow, and now you don't know how to get them out. Some of those big things we're going to have to go, and some of the small ones too, and all of the things we had forgotten about, and maybe even some of the ones we were pretty sure we would never forget. For any of you who've ever had a move, this may sound familiar. And of course, what I failed to take into consideration was how difficult responsibly handling the stuff that had overflowed our life that wasn't part of our everyday experience was going to be. If any of you are ever tempted to post ads on Craigslist and eBay and Etsy and Regretsy and the local post and Facebook, all of which say things like for sale, cheap collection of strange things that made sense at some point, responses, sadly, are not overwhelming. People said they wanted things and immediately moved to Outer Mongolia without a forwarding address. Our moving date got closer and closer, and somehow we still owned all the things that we had chosen to part with or that were not central to our lives. I thought for a moment of selling the house as is, oddly half-furnished. I started to wonder about the cost of a dumpster. And every time that dumpster crossed my mind, I would think of my grandmother who had grown up poor in an orphanage because her family couldn't feed her. And I thought about her collecting little pieces of fabric to sew into her quilts. And every piece had value, no matter how small, and she would adapt the designs over and over. And I thought about how she would feel seeing me chucking things in a dumpster. Trash Day is amazing. It's a snapshot of what we once found important. So important that we went out of our way a little or a lot to own it. We paid to have it shipped. We went out and got it. We waited in lines. Sometimes we inherited it from others who found it so important that they gave it to us. Some of it, once we decide to pitch it, is still valuable enough that others liberate it from the roadside before it even makes it to the truck. And what doesn't get liberated, that makes it to a landfill. Our stuff, discarded junk. You use do well in general at minimizing junk. It's very true. We recycle, we buy carefully. And yet we're surrounded by a world where disposable is a way of life. Easier and cheaper to get rid of it than to fix it or to change our lives so that we never needed it. Easier to accept planned obsolescence, lousy construction. There are only so many battles we can fight, and that toaster may just not be worth it. And it's the shadows of this worldview that interest me. A culture that's based on material disposability rather than repair leaks like rancid water into other parts of life. The way we treat things becomes the way we can treat people, and life becomes a commodity. We learn to treat difficult relationships the way we treat difficult repairs. It's too expensive. Throw it out. Get a new one. Get a simpler one, an easier one. It becomes problematic when we consider our first two principles, the inherent worth and dignity of every person and striving toward justice, equity, and compassion in human relationships. I'm as guilty as anyone else of sliding into thinking that some relationships are disposable. They are broken. They are too difficult to fix. They are too expensive to fix, and I don't have the time or the internal currency. Relationships with people I don't understand or who don't understand me. Relationships where I get it wrong time and time again, and they are happy to tell me so. Ally relationships are some of the relationships where it's easy to get it wrong. And it's easy to be tempted to say, it's too broken, I can't fix this. put it out by the curb. The readings we heard this morning verged on angry at points, and these were some of the milder ones I could find. Some of them were so aggressive that I could not use them in a church. My own recent experience has said a lot. When Ferguson, Missouri happened, there were quick calls that went out all over this area for vigils, for support. And we went, Brian, myself. And when we got to Dineen Park, which is where the vigils were being held, I noticed something interesting. There were probably 10 or 11 of us there whose skin was pale. There were over 150 people whose skin was not pale. And they were angry, but they were determined. What they put out a call for was not violence, was not to go to Ferguson and cause trouble. It was to set up voter registration. How could they ally with the people of Ferguson, Missouri, to arrange voter registration, education about what the problem was, and systemic organization to help change the structure of the Ferguson police force from being 87% white, three black officers, to representing the face of the community, which was almost 90% black. While I was there, a young white man who had a bandana around his lower face was being very verbal. "We're going to go. We're going to show them." And he was getting louder and louder. And one of the young organizers of this thing finally turned to him and said, "What exactly are you going to show them? When you go and raise your voice and yell, I will be the one who gets hit." And that's real. In Ferguson, a young white man threw a bottle at an officer. They turned and beat the black man next to him into the ground. It's caught on multiple videos. That's the reality. Being an ally is hard. These are risky commitments to connection that leave us open and vulnerable. They cause pain. They hold up our privilege, whatever it is, to a mirror that we would rather not see at times. Activism in and of itself can be simple. We work to support a political candidate who we feel supports our worldview. We fight for our own interests and the interest of others. That's activism, and it's a marvelous thing, and we try to engage in that as often as possible. But it's the equivalent of wrapping your own belongings in plastic before a move. You're taking care of yourself and the people just like you, and that's not a bad thing. But the call to activism is broader than the causes that personally impact us. You don't just have to wrap your stuff and move it safely. You are responsible for what happens to all the other stuff, too. And that other stuff is being an ally. To respect the worth and dignity of each person and to strive toward that justice and equity and compassion, I have to work toward freedom and dignity and justice for the people who aren't like me. I have to walk with people and fight for people whose experience of the world is nothing like mine, and frankly, I may not even get it. How we walk matters. If our hymn is right and walking with you is our prayer, then we have to walk some roads that we're not familiar with and sometimes ones that lead to places we don't want to go. Last June, just about the time we were moving, a writer named Mia McKenzie, who I would heavily recommend, She's otherwise known as the author of the book and blog called Black Girl Dangerous. Very articulate speaker. She wrote a piece called 8 Ways Not to Be an Ally, a Non-Comprehensive List. I can't repeat it here, and I can't read it here. The language is aggressive and occasionally vulgar. But it captures the essence of some of the ways we get lost trying to find our way on those roads. I want to look at some of those steps today, even if I don't do it with her flair and style. As you use, we get presented with opportunities to stand on the side of love often. I go to marches and protests and vigils. I stand in solidarity with the people of Ferguson, Missouri, and with the oppressed and threatened LGBTQ people in Uganda. I've gone on mission trips and spent freezing nights in a cardboard shanty town to call attention to the plight of the homeless. But one act of solidarity doesn't make me an ally forever. Fighting oppression is an ongoing, never-ending struggle. And if I'm not in those trenches each time I get a chance, I don't get to keep wearing my good guy badge that says ally on it. A year or so ago, a UU minister, senior minister, who should know much better, who does a lot of LGBTQ work, announced to a room full of transgender, genderqueer, LGBTQ folk, "Well, I'm just one of you. I mean, I've been doing this so long, it doesn't matter." And the response around the room was a resounding, "No, you're not. When you go out in public with your husband, you don't have to worry that someone's going to throw a bottle at your face for holding his hand." Once I realized that unless I keep doing the work, I'm not an active ally, I have to realize that it's not about me, and that's a hard one. Knowing how sophisticated I am, it may surprise you all, but I have put my foot down my throat so many times, it's not even funny. The taste is lousy, and it hurts. The first time someone corrected the way I was helping, I was ready to fuss out of my way. "What do you mean? What do you mean I'm not doing it right? Can't you see all the help I'm giving here to you who's really got to live with this? I'll shut up now." I learned to be quiet and listen. I learned to accept it as true that maybe I did say something that was a microaggression or that was just plain culturally not right for their culture. My education will never be more important than what they wake up to every day. While it's okay that I was only asking a question because I wanted to help, it's also okay for me to hear that I don't get to ask that. It's rude. Or that it was a microaggression, or that it was just flat out racist, sexist, ableist, or something else that I haven't thought of. Mia brings up ally dating. And it's an area that many of us don't deal with often, but it's there. One of the big problems is that dating only people of a specific race outside your own, announcing that you're straight but you only date trans men or trans women because you're standing in solidarity, it doesn't make you an ally. It may mean you're an ally. It may mean nothing, or it may mean that you have fetishized a particular group and are simply using them to make yourself happy. One of the phrases I've heard around ally work and in UU circles is, "I don't see race." That also goes for gender or ability status. The problem is, this does nothing for the person you're talking to and everything for you. It takes away part of who they are and says to them, "I'm just not going to see that bit of you that doesn't look like the bit of me. And now I'm off the hook." The problem is that they have to live with what that difference means every day of their life. They don't have the luxury that their ally does of announcing, oh, it's just invisible. I just won't be black today. I just won't be trans today. It's invisible. Doesn't work very well. It's easy to be uncomfortable at times about personal privilege. And it's terribly easy to be an ally until we feel that we've done enough and then we get to go home to bed. But being an ally, that commitment doesn't stop when I've done enough not to feel guilty right now. It means I'm committed to working until success, until everybody can go home to bed and not worry about this anymore. Another not so fun point of being an ally is that it's really easy to tell Grandma she's being a racist. That's simple. You can tell your Uncle Marvin to stuff a sock in it. You can even thump your brother and tell him that was a bad comment. It's really hard to go into a hall of power. It's really hard to go to a radical feminist and saying, you know, you're being transphobic and I don't want to continue this conversation. Being an ally means doing it in public. It means putting yourself out there and setting yourself up for the same pain and embarrassment that the people you are supporting suffer from. Not just at home. Not just where it's safe. It means doing the legwork and not getting on TV. Doing it because it's right, not because you'll be thanked. You're not there to be a savior. You're just there to help carry the load. A foot soldier in a battle that may help to take away some of your privilege. Doesn't that sound counterintuitive? Being an ally means that while I could and can and should read and reread and read again the words of marginalized people, I can only learn from them. I cannot teach them. They are not my story, and I cannot teach the feel of them. To paraphrase LGBTQ author Helen Boyd, not being a jerk doesn't make you a miracle. It doesn't even make you a good person, just a decent one. My goal isn't to save the world. My goal is to ask you to join me in being an ally. To join me in committing to make the world a little less broken. Spot by spot, place by place, fight by fight. Walking with you is my prayer. And may the roads we walk lead us to places we wouldn't have chosen and we wish weren't there. May we walk together with the marginalized and the voiceless and the unseen until we can all go home to bed. May we bend the arc of the universe toward justice. Amen.
We extinguish our chalice and know that we carry its fire inside our hearts. Please rise in body or spirit and join in singing number 1028, Fire of Commitment, and please remain standing for the benediction.
Thank you.
has ended, but your service has just begun. Share yourself with the world, and everywhere you go, may there be life, peace, and may it be so.